Amidst today's dairy crisis, it might be easy to forget that we've been looking for solutions to economic waves for years. Catherine Durand from AgriMark gives us a history brief, starting with the farm crisis in the 1980s.
Well, they started with trying to tackle a refundable assessment program, which would assess dairy farmers, but offer a refund of those assessments back to those farmers that were not increasing their production.
So what were some of these programs?
So the first one happened in 1982 with the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act, and that was the refundable assessment program I just talked about. That proved to be very successful at generating revenue to help dairy farmers offset the government prices. However, it did very little to decrease production. So going into 83, we, with the Dairy Production Stabilization Act, we had the Milk Diversion Program. And that program would pay farmers to decrease their production. And what we found with that was that production was declining during the period of that program, but immediately upon completion of the program, milk production rose almost immediately afterwards. So it was a successful program, but only on the short term.
Yeah.
We tried again in 1985 with the Food Security Act, and that program created the Dairy Termination Program, also known as the Whole Herd Buyout Program. And that program, the government paid farmers to exit the industry. So farmers either had to slaughter their cows or export them. The idea being, let's decrease the amount of animals in the country to decrease supplies and help offset or increase the prices. That, I will say, was probably the most successful of the attempts. There was a five-year provision in there, so you had to take your farm out of production for 5 years. So that really impacted supplies more in the long term than the previous attempts. And then there were these smaller attempts moving forward. In 88 to 90, the Secretary of Agriculture gave discretionary authority, was given discretionary authority to use the milk diversion program or the whole herd buyout program again if he wanted to. That was never used. And then in 1990, the Omnibus Budget Act, Reconciliation Act of that year, did the same thing that the 82 one did with the refundable assessment program. But this time around, it was very low price level, so it really wasn't, there wasn't much of an incentive for producers to decrease production there. More recent attempts that we have made locally in the Northeast, we had the Northeast Dairy Compact. So that was a deal with the six New England states where Class 1 prices were set. But there was a supply management refund program in there that incentivized farmers and gave a premium back to them if they kept their production under 1% growth each year. And then the most recent was in the 2014 Senate version of the Farm Bill. There was a dairy market stabilization program, and that program was going to trigger if certain margins were hit. So if the milk margin between the milk price and the feed cost, went below $6 or $4, there would be penalties imposed on farmers who were increasing production.
So I'm a 90s baby. Reaganomics is just a dinner table term to me that we had weird dinner table discussions in my house. So how did the economic climate of the 80s shape these programs, and how is it still influencing dairy bans for programs?
Well, I think the major influencers here going into the 80s were that pre-80s, we wanted to just support farmers as much as we could, have some support prices, do what we can as a government. But as milk production was just increasing beyond sustainable rates, the dollars going from the American consumers and the American government into farmers' pockets was just getting a little bit out of control. Certainly, those programs are very successful for dairy farmers. Just not sustainable in the long term. What I will say is that there are still a lot of, we still have the problem today.
Yeah.
And so I, from my perspective, I think there needs to be a mindset shift a little bit here that we just need to talk about production in a different light than we have in the past.
Yeah. So we're going to change gears to the present day now. I'm with Ben Lane from CoBank. Now, Ben, to start off, can we talk about some of the most prevalent programs in Wisconsin?
I think in Wisconsin, there's a number of different programs. A lot of the smaller cooperatives and regional cooperatives are dealing with managing their milk supply in their own ways. So when you've got an oversupply of milk and you're having a hard time marketing that and looking farther for markets and trying to, bear that extra cost, a lot of these cooperatives are sort of implementing these base programs where they establish a base that their producers are able to get full price for their milk, and then if you choose to expand above that, you have to bear the extra marketing cost of that milk. So I'd say that's probably the most common approach that we're seeing across the board and nationally and in Wisconsin as well.
So I was just talking with Catherine about how programs from the past are influencing programs of today. Can I get your input on that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think hopefully you learn from the past and you try and improve things. So it's, I think there's always that influence. It's a learning process. So I think that, you know, we've seen different government programs or quota programs. And I think a lot of the programs you see at the cooperative level are borrowing from some of these quota programs of the past and trying to figure out how do they tailor that individually to their membership. So I think we're seeing sort of lessons from the past applied on more of a regional and cooperative level today.
So a lot of these programs are sticking to tradition, whereas the world economy is ever evolving. What do you think that we're keeping pace, or do you think that we need to adapt faster? What might those adaptations be?
Yeah, I think we do need to be careful to keep growing and keep, you know, at least innovating, if not growing in supply in the near term. I think continuing to innovate and find ways to gain efficiency there. So I think that continues to be a challenge, and markets are becoming more and more global. So it's critical to, whatever the approach that's taken, it's critical not to cut ourselves off from markets at this point.
So how are milk supply programs in states like Wisconsin, California, that are dairy rich, different from milk supply programs in like your home state that aren't quite as dairy plentiful?
Well, I think, you know, it's really a regional issue. So there's different milk sheds that are more balanced and there's other milk sheds that are heavy. So I think between the Northeast and up through Michigan and probably out through Wisconsin, things are pretty heavy at the moment. Other parts of the country, like the Southwest or California, are pretty balanced. You know, there's even some areas where you're wanting to see growth and people are eager to expand. So I think it's really a regional situation, and I think that's why we're seeing a lot of different regional solutions rather than an overarching solution at the moment.
Yeah, so do you see consolidation ever happening, especially now as a country, farmers are at least attempting to band together?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of consolidation in the industry and across agriculture, but I think it's also important in a lot of regions, Wisconsin in particular, the upper Midwest, the Northeast, it's still important to have a lot of diversity, and I think that's why you're seeing a lot of these efforts to really find ways to continue to allow for that diversity, continue to allow family farms to continue operating as they have been. So I think trying to maintain that diversity is really at the core of a lot of these programs.
So what about dairy programs do farmers need to know?
I think most importantly, there's not a magic bullet. There's not a one-size-fits-all solution. These all sort of depend on the individual situations. It's going to be a challenge. I think whenever there is an oversupply of milk, it's going to be uncomfortable to try and find a way to pull that back. It's not an easy problem. There's pros and cons to all of it. So I think going into it, understanding that there's going to be challenges, and I think that dairy producers are certainly aware of that and are familiar with going through challenging times, and so I think you got to manage those expectations.
If you missed it, that was Ben Lane from CoBank. Seeing the progression of dairy supply programs, we now ask ourselves what we've learned. From the southern end of the world's longest barn, here in Madison, I'm Bobby Joe Burgum.